it up to all faithful Mormons to follow the tenets of the revelation?
If it is a declaration for the entire church, the answer to that is yes.
It's Gordon Hinckley. He's the living prophet of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the Salt Lake City Mormons. Now, a member of his church is Mitt Romney. He's running for president, former governor of Massachusetts, and what he calls, at least by his own admission, a true blue through and through Mormon. Now, the question that was put to the living prophet there, Gordon Hinckley, was, if you make a pronouncement, are all Mormons required to follow it? And his answer is, yeah, if it's a pronouncement from God for the whole church, yes. Even if it's a president who's a Mormon. See, this is the genesis of the question that I want you to consider during this last hour of the program. We're going to be listening to a lot of stuff about Mitt Romney and his Mormonism, his journey of faith, and his views on the issues. And we'll get to some other stuff, too, during Audio Open Lines. But the question I'm laying before you is, let's say for the sake of argument that Mitt Romney, who won the straw poll among social conservatives in Washington this last weekend, Mitt Romney actually gets the nomination. He's polling very well in those gateway states, those Iowas, those New Hampshires kind of things. If he gets the nomination and then goes on by some chance to win the White House, and he's a true blue Mormon through and through, lay aside the whole issue of what the living prophet may ask him to do. What teachings of Mormonism do you think might affect his actions as president? We ask the same questions about Christian presidents, don't we? What teachings of their church might affect their actions as president? Look at George W. Bush. He is a professed evangelical Christian, and he credits that with his views on things like life and gay marriage, doesn't he? Yes. So his unwillingness to advocate for something like gay marriage is more or less based upon the Christian teachings that he adheres to. His veto of federal funding for partial birth abortion. He does this because he's a Christian. I think that's a safe argument. Although he doesn't make Christian arguments for it, he's basing his actions on what he believes as a Christian. And no one really wonders at this. It's kind of what we expect of our presidents, where their convictions come from. What about Mitt Romney? There are teachings in the Mormon church that might affect his actions as a possible future president. What do you think they might be? Or maybe you think there's nothing in Mormon teaching that would have any bearing upon how he conducts himself as president. I want to hear from you and your answer to that question. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Email us here in the studio this Tuesday, October the 23rd. Can you think of teachings in Mormonism that might affect Mitt Romney's actions as a possible future president? Or not? Issues ETC at KFUO.org, 1-800-730-2727, or 505-7850. While we wait for your phone calls, here's a bit from CNN. Mitt Romney's religious journey, he has quite a history as a very faithful Mormon. Let's listen.
Thank you. Nice to meet you. Well before he plunged into the rough and tumble of political campaigns, the challenges of the business world, or running the Olympics in Salt Lake City, before any of that, for 2.5 grueling years, Willard Mitt Romney put his future on hold and gave himself over to God.
It made me search my soul.
Romney, at 19, became a full-time missionary of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, leaving college to fulfill a uniquely Mormon calling, just like his father George and older brother Scott.
He felt a responsibility to follow in everybody's footsteps. He felt a responsibility to do what he thought was best under our religious views.
Hey, my name's Elder Gibson. What's your name?
You've probably seen them before. The earnest young men in white shirts and ties, the neatly dressed women, more than 50,000 of them sent around the globe.
Have you heard of Book of Mormon before?
The church hopes every young Mormon will answer the call to serve. But fewer than half, about 38% of American Mormons, actually do. Mitt Romney was one of them.
Mitt and I first met in the city of Caen.
Dane McBride and Romney were missionaries together in France.
We gave direction and hope and a faith in Jesus Christ to very many people who were directionless.
And yet, more often than not, they faced rejection.
He expressed that it was difficult and that it was hard and that people were not always friendly and receptive.
A missionary who spent two and a half years in France would perhaps be successful in bringing two, maybe three people into the church during that entire time.
Life for the missionaries was highly regimented. They had little contact with home, no cigarettes, no alcohol, no girlfriends. Mike Bush was in Romney's mission group.
Why can't you date?
You're focused. When you go on your mission, you set that part of your life, you put it on hold. You press the pause button.
6 days a week, they went door to door, distributing religious pamphlets known as tracts.
What was the most unpleasant part of it?
Tracting. You're frustrated because you feel, you know, I have something here that would be important to you, ma'am. I really would like to talk to you about it. And no, thank you, I'm not interested, and the door slams. You know, that's okay. Well, you learn to live with it, but it's still hard.
What would be the first thing you would tell them about the LDS Church and why it's something they should open their mind to?
The fact that the Book of Mormon is a second witness of Jesus Christ.
Missionaries say they don't measure success by the number of people they convert, but they do keep count.
Well, here it says 200 baptisms by January 1st. So that was a goal, though, that you would hope that you'd get people.
Yes, and I believe we did reach that.
Weekly conversion diaries kept a tally, and Mitt Romney was often on top, handing out more Books of Mormon than anyone else, knocking on more doors, getting more invitations to sit and chat. Then, about 2 years into his mission, tragedy.
A terrible car accident in which Mitt was driving the car and it was hit by a drunk driver coming the other way around a curve, and Mitt was in serious, serious condition. As a matter of fact, when the policeman looked at him, he said that il mort, he said he's dead.
In fact, he was badly injured, but recovered, and returned even more driven to succeed on his mission.
He became the top missionary, the lead missionary in the whole mission.
During his missionary years, Mitt Romney spread the word of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints one door knock at a time. But as president, he would have access to more than 300 million Americans all at once. So how would this man who portrays himself as a candidate of faith use that huge platform? It's a question on many people's minds.
And that's a question I've laid before you. Not that we expect Mitt Romney to be knocking doors if he makes it to the White House. He will have his time taken up by matters of state. But what teachings in Mormonism, as you consider all of the teachings that Mormonism has particular to itself, what teachings in Mormonism do you think might affect Mitt Romney's actions as president were he to get the nomination and win the White House in 2008? He seems to be as likely a contender as anybody else. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. No casual Mormon. Mitt Romney, he was apparently one of the leading lights, even as a teenager, in his mission work. Issues ETC at KFUO.org. Let's go first to Chris, where he waits in his car. Hi, Chris.
Hi, how you doing?
Doing well.
Good. You know, I don't really, with the whole Mormonism, I think in the morality, I don't have any problems with Mitt Romney, you know, if he were to be our president. In terms of the morality of the Mormon faith, you know, they're very akin to, to the Christian faith. But I think, you know, obviously with things, the rest of their doctrine, I have a problem with. What does concern me is not so much what, you know, power he might have or how he might influence the country, but I'm more concerned with the blurring of the lines between Mormonism and the rest of the Christian or Christian faith. And maybe in our culture, that line gets blurred some more, and that just leads itself to confusion, which, you know, is never good for, our cause and our mission as Christians.
Interesting thought there, Chris. Thank you. I think that's a concern that many share. Do you think that having a Mormon president, and presidents are ubiquitous, they're on TV every night, they represent America both here and abroad, they can break into primetime television anytime they want to. Who else can do that? No one. They are everywhere in our policy, in our thinking. They're asked to opine on every issue that there is under the sun. Many of those things having nothing to do with their constitutional duties, but they do it anyway. They do an Easter egg roll at the White House, don't they? They have they attend as a representative of the state various funerals and state religious functions. There's Mitt Romney, a Mormon, the very first Mormon president. It's a possibility. And is there a potential there for a confusion, since we've always had Christian, or at least professed Christians as presidents, a confusion to just say, well, Mitt Romney, the first Mormon president, by the time he's been in office for 2 or 3 years, people are saying, you know, you kind of forget about him being a Mormon, and you kind of think of him just like a Christian. The blurring of the two. Heck, there are evangelical leaders who are already busy blurring the two right now, who are having a hard time seeing the difference between Christianity and Mormonism. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Can you think of any teachings of Mormonism that might affect Mitt Romney's service in the White House, were he to make it there? 1-800-730-2727, 505-7850, issues etc. at kfuo.org. I'm thinking through all the teachings that Mormonism entertains. Now, don't go to the polygamy, because I don't think that's fair. They have renounced polygamy for the time being. So I don't think Mitt Romney is going to get in there and say, I need a bill to redefine marriage in polygamous terms. I don't think he's going to do that. He's also smarter than that. But they do teach that God was once a man, and that what God is, we will be, at least the Mormons will be. They do teach things like baptism for the dead. We don't know whether Mitt Romney is engaged in any of these things, although Temple Mormons are generally understood to have engaged in these things. There are all sorts of secret ceremonies, not privy to non-Mormon eyes, that take place within the temple. I mean, think about the Sunday morning. We're accustomed to watching our presidents, whatever their Christian denominational affiliation, with Bible in hand, walking at least occasionally into a church or out of a church on a Sunday morning for the photo op. But Mitt Romney goes to the temple. Or to the local, I don't even know what they call them. What do the Mormons, do they call them ward houses or something like that? I forget. That'll be a change of pace. What if he decides to go meet with Gordon Hinckley, the living prophet of the LDS Church? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, or issues etc. at kfuo.org.
Our Father in heaven.
For Mitt Romney, it's a divine question that won't go away. What would it mean to have a devout Mormon in the White House?
We're thankful on the occasion of the birth of thy son.
The question won't go away largely because many voters don't understand what it means to be Mormon. Some voters believe the Mormon Church still allows a man to have multiple wives. This was Romney in 60 Minutes.
I can't imagine anything more awful than polygamy.
And some view Mormons with suspicion, wondering if powerful church leaders could somehow control a Mormon president.
Hi, Gary. How are you? Like you?
I caught up with Mitt Romney in Michigan.
I think Americans want a person of faith to lead the country. I don't think that they care about the particular brand of faith so much as whether we share values.
Here in Salt Lake City, at the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, Romney's candidacy has put church leaders under a microscope.
Now is the time for all of us to reach out and tell others who we are.
In a rare interview, Apostle Russell Ballard, a top Mormon leader, is crystal clear. There is no relationship between the campaign and the church.
Does the church endorse candidates for president of the United States?
No, we don't.
Do you think it's proper for a politician to spread the word about their religion the same way they did when they were on their missions?
No, I think that would be terribly misunderstood.
The suspicion that as president, Romney might take orders from the church derives from Mormon history. Church presidents are considered prophets. In 1843, a prophet's divine revelation led to polygamy. It was then abolished in 1890. So what if today's church president had a major revelation? Could that influence a Romney White House?
Is it up to all faithful Mormons to follow the tenets of the revelation?
If it is a declaration for the entire church, the answer to that is yes.
And is that infrequent, though, in modern times?
It's infrequent today because the foundation of the church is solidly in place.
There is certainly prejudice against Mormons.
Hello, sir. How are you?
I'm one person who will not vote for a Mormon.
Oh, is that right? Can I shake your hand anyway?
No.
Okay.
Nope.
The Southern Baptist Convention calls the church a cult. Many Americans say they don't even consider Mormons Christians. An article in the online magazine Slate brands the religion's founder, Joseph Smith, a con man.
In fact, he was Elder Russell Ballard's great-great-uncle.
What does Joseph Smith mean to a faithful Mormon?
Everything. God, the Eternal Father, and his Son, the Lord Jesus Christ, appeared to him.
Mormons believe in the Old and New Testaments, but also in the Book of Mormon. Think of it as kind of a sequel to the Bible.
We believe that the Garden of Eden was on this continent.
So that the Garden of Eden wasn't in the Holy Land?
No, and not in our doctrine.
For Mormons, Eden was in Missouri, and Jesus Christ visited the Americas after the resurrection.
We know that he came and taught the people and restored the gospel to them.
Has Jesus returned here to the United States, in your beliefs?
Oh, yes.
A new CNN opinion research poll shows 19% of voters are less likely to support a Mormon for president. That corresponds to tens of millions of voting-age Americans who say they're not inclined to vote for a guy like Mitt Romney. So should the campaign talk more about religion, less, the same? Well, that strategy is being actively debated.
So are you considering communicating more about your religion to the American public?
You know, I'm happy to talk about my faith to people in our country. I believe in God. I believe that all the children on earth are children of God. So will there be a speech about this at some point? Perhaps. Haven't given that a final decision at this point.
A looming political question for a man of faith who's not overly eager to publicly talk about his Mormon faith. Gary Tuchman, CNN, Dearborn, Michigan.
All right, can you think of anything in Mormon teaching that would give you pause about Mitt Romney taking the White House, if that's a real possibility? Something that could affect his actions. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Someone had mentioned morality. Chris had called in earlier and talked about the morality, although I would be quick to point out that most of the Mormons who now hold federal office, a handful of senators, a few congressmen, I'm sure, they haven't allowed their Mormon morality to affect much of what their policy is. Most of them turn out to be kind of pro-choice. Romney was, too, to begin with. See, there are no guarantees on the morality end here with Mormonism, at least if the track record of prominent political Mormons is to be taken into consideration. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, or issue ZTC at KFUO.org. Romney's trying to thread the needle. He says he's happy to talk about his faith, but when asked particular questions about Mormon teaching, he says you're going to have to talk to the church leaders about that. So he wants to talk in generalities about his faith and not in particulars. Fair enough. He's the one running the campaign. Charles is calling from St. Louis. Hi, Charles.
Hello, Todd. That second revelation that interview talked about, of course, is the Book of Mormon itself, and it was produced here in North America. And according to it, Jesus made an appearance here in North America. So there's a special role that America plays in Mormon prophecy. And one wonders. In fact, they claim that our Constitution is divinely inspired. And one can wonder what the effect of this sort of Americanistic religion might have on a president. They also, by the way, the Book of Mormon also explicitly says that the Whore of Babylon, that is the Roman Catholic Church, removed plain and precious truths from the Book of the Lamb, which is the Bible. So they also teach that the Bible was corrupted by the church.
Interesting, Charles. Thank you very much. Now, listen carefully to Charles' first insight there, and that is, instead of thinking about the general teachings or the specific teachings of Mormonism, think about the role of America in Mormonism. We heard one of the apostles there in the CNN piece, one of the Mormon apostles, say that they believe that the Garden of Eden was in Missouri. He says this unapologetically. They believe that Jesus bodily visited after his resurrection the Americas to spend a little time with those whom they believe to be the lost tribes of Israel, the lost Jewish tribes of Israel, otherwise known as the Native Americans. They believe this. Now, does every casual Mormon believe it? Maybe not, but this is what the church teaches. And remember, Mitt Romney says he is Mormon, true blue through and through. So we can assume that he believes it too. I've had deep concerns about prominent American politicians who are Christian Zionists. In other words, they believe that the modern nation state of Israel is a fulfillment of biblical prophecy and has most favored nation status with God, and therefore, even if it doesn't benefit us in any way, we're going to have Israel, the modern nation state of Israel, as an ally and send them bunches and bunches of money if we want America to be on God's good side. That's what Christian Zionism, if consistently held, leads to in our politicians. Right? Well, replace the Christian Zionist with the Mormon president who believes that America not only has a special place in their prophecy, but also is the homeland of the Garden of Eden, a place visited bodily by Jesus Christ and inhabited by the lost tribes of Israel. What kind of view of America will that view of America produce by way of foreign policy in a Mormon president? I mean, people have worried that George W. Bush kind of holding to this manifest destiny idea has gotten us into a war or two that he shouldn't have. Well, what if the next occupant of the White House is Mitt Romney and he believes that America's Constitution is divinely inspired? And that America has a special place in the Mormon scheme of things, and that God revealed the restoration of Christianity right here in America, and that gives America a special place in God's heart. I can imagine it might have some effect on its foreign policy. Don't you think? Does it concern you? Oh, the other thing I hadn't mentioned is, as important as who gets elected president is the people that they choose to advise them and serve them in their cabinet. What if there are a majority Mormons there? Anne's calling from Crestwood. Hi, Anne.
Hi, good afternoon. Whenever I think of Joseph Smith, first of all, I think of him as a pedophile, and then I wonder, was he delusional or a chronic liar? And then, you know, I think, well, maybe he just should have written fairy tales or something. Yet this is Mitt Romney's, he's a follower of this man. So that kind of scares me, the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you very much, Anne, that we'll never know whether Joseph Smith was a pathological liar or delusional. And the only difference is, did he believe his own lies? And I don't know if Joseph Smith did. We will never know. Unless someone comes up with a document from Smith's hand saying, I finally pulled it off. I started the Mormon church just like I planned to. Ha, 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 ha. Short of that, we'll never know. Well, put it in the modern day context. What if Mitt Romney, the closest thing to Joseph Smith in America today, is Warren Jeffs? That's the closest thing to Joseph Smith in America today. Leader Warren Jeffs, who's going to prison for facilitating statutory rape and polygamy. So, what if you draw that connection, this is the guy that Mitt Romney says is his spiritual leader. Not Warren Jeffs, but his 19th century equivalent, Joseph Smith. Any teachings in Mormonism that you think might affect Mitt Romney's time in the White House, were you to make it there? Call during this break, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, and email us here in the studio this Tuesday, the 23rd of October, issuesetc@kfuo.org.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Next time of the Bible study, we'll deal with that famous passage that says that even Satan disguises himself as an angel of light. If Satan can disguise himself as an angel of light, how is it possible that truth can be discerned in any way? Let's ask Pastor Mark Hawkinson next time on our 10:05 Bible study, 2 Corinthians 11.
The Bible study on AM 850 KFUO is underwritten by Concordia Christian Books and Gifts, serving God's people.
Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana invites you to join Issues Etc. regular guest Arthur Just, Larry Rast, and Carl Schalk for the Good Shepherd Institute, November 4th through the 6th on the campus of Concordia Theological Seminary. This annual conference equips laypeople, musicians, and pastors to better serve their congregations through music and the Word. For more information on the Good Shepherd Institute, check out our homepage, issuesetc.org, or call 260-452-2256.
The devil's methods. Beware of them.
Answers with Ken Ham, a popular speaker on the authority and accuracy of the Bible's very first verse. Well, Ken, we know that Satan uses a number of methods to convince people not to trust the Bible, and I think we'd both agree that a lot of his attention is in the area of the book of Genesis, right?
Well, that's certainly right in this era of history. You see, if we go to 2 Corinthians chapter 11 and verse 3, this is the passage that outlines a warning for us concerning the methods Satan will use to get people to disbelieve the Bible. Here, the Apostle Paul warns us that Satan will use the same method on us as he did on Eve to get us to a position of not believing what God said. Now, in Genesis, Satan created doubt by asking the question, "Did God really say?" And thousands of years later, mark, the same question is being asked today of Christians when they read Genesis. For example, did God really say it was 6 days? Did God really say it was a global flood? And so on. And you know what? This doubt is often created because of the teaching of an earth that's supposedly millions of years old. And Satan knows if you can get people to doubt Genesis, which is the foundational book of the Bible, then it can lead to questioning the rest of Scripture. So let's not have Satan and the secular scientists cause us to doubt God's word.
Many people question the Bible's accuracy because Christians can't offer answers to questions like, where did Cain find his wife? Read Ken Ham's intriguing booklet on that very question at AnswersRadio.com.
Rally Day on AM850 KFUO is this Thursday, the 25th. We're hoping that you will call to pledge or renew your day sponsorship. Listen for your chance to claim the Shop and Glaze package featuring $100 gift certificate to the St. Clair Square Mall and a $25 gift certificate to Cruda Bakery in Collinsville, or the Rest and Relaxation Package donated by Kevin and Vicki Eater of his Rest Bed and Breakfast, featuring a gift certificate for a one-night stay in the Upper Room Suite with full breakfast the next day, or the Hear the Symphony Package courtesy of Classic 99 Radio, featuring two tickets to the St. Louis Symphony performance of the Bach Brandenburg Concerto No. 5 on January 12, 2008, along with a $50 gift certificate for P.F. Chang's restaurant. Be listening this Thursday, Rally Day, for your chance to sign up to be an AM850 KFUO day sponsor.
Underwriting on AM850 KFUO provided by Reliable Heating and Cooling. Christian people who understand the value of bringing you God's Word on the radio. The folks at Reliable also know how important it is to have your furnace checked before winter. An inefficient or deteriorating heat exchanger costs you needless expense and could be dangerous. A preseason inspection from Reliable is convenient, affordable, and gives you peace of mind. Reliable Heating and Cooling, supporting the broadcast ministry of AM850 KFUO.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about Mitt Romney, his faith, and whether or not his Mormonism might have some bearing upon his actions if he makes it to the White House in 2008. It's a reasonable question. I want your thoughts on it. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, or issuesetc at kfuo.org. Our Issues Etc. book of the month for October is called Lutheran Pastors and Politics, Issues in the Public Square. One of its co-authors, Dr. Jeffrey Walls, a regular guest here on the program. It's a bit of research on what Lutheran pastors think, not only in terms of their politics, but their level of involvement as pastors in the American political scene. Find out more about the book at our website, issuesetc.org, or call Concordia Publishing House any weekday during regular business hours, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. Hey, Jeff, I'm looking through the research in the back of this book. And there are no questions here about whether or not any of these Lutheran pastors intend to vote for you for president of the United States, although I have just been made aware in this last break that there is a Facebook page that is pushing your candidacy. I think it's
Explain to our listeners and me what is Facebook.
I all I know about Facebook, okay, is that, well, let me see. There's Facebook, and then there's MySpace, and then there's a bunch of other these places where you can go and set up your own cheap website, and then you can have people join, and they can visit your website and look at you and talk to you and things like that. And Facebook, I don't know why it's set up the way it is. It must be. It's for students. It's originally set up for high school students and college students. And you got to be invited onto it. It's a kind of a safe place for kids to have their own vanity websites. I don't know. Is apparently, one of our listeners has appointed himself your campaign manager, because this Facebook page says a couple of dozen for Jeff. Jeff Schwartz for president. A nice picture of Jeff appearing there before his hopefully his future seal. Let me see. If he can manage Todd Wilkin running a country, would be a breeze. Is what it says. You know where they photoshopped? I don't know if they photoshopped that or not, but you know where they got that picture? That's your picture in front of Willow Creek, baby. When we went up to Willow Creek and we went out on the lawn and had one of their PR people take a picture of us in front of Willow Creek, in front of the big baptismal pool that they have out there, I recognize that picture. They've just edited me out and put the presidential
seal. I had a
in.
Listener call. I never followed up this. Willow Creek has like a photo page, and we're in it.
I don't know if I believe this.
I know. I can't believe that.
If you Google Wilkin Schwartz Willow Creek, you'll get the picture. And look for images. You'll get the picture of us standing in front of Willow Creek.
Yeah, I don't think they have our name on Willow Creek's website, but they just have like a photo page, and they got you and I.
We're so handsome, you know. Who could resist?
Hey, while we're on the issue of politics,
yeah.
Two issues. I stand corrected. Last week, I didn't speak definitively, but you said something about Bill Clinton winning Missouri.
Yes.
In both presidential runs.
And you like,
and,
so
and I
often,
questioned that.
Like, so often lately, you doubted me. You did it yesterday, too.
I don't doubt you theologically, but all other areas I usually doubt you.
Yes, you do.
But I stand corrected. Bill Clinton won Missouri in both races. And I think Buzz was the one that looked up. I think Missouri's picked every single presidential race right except Adlai Stevenson, I think is what Buzz was telling me.
Wow.
I didn't check on my own.
So
on that.
Missouri has gone for the winner every 4 years with as far back as one cares to measure it.
I didn't do my own research. That's according to our Thursday Friday engineer Buzz.
Well, okay. Now, see, the point I was trying to make there was that Missouri recently in a poll showed Giuliani winning over a – they did the hypothetical Giuliani versus Hillary Clinton. And they showed Giuliani winning in Missouri at this point. Now, granted, we're talking about we're still a year away from the presidential elections, but it showed that. And I simply pointed out that Missouri has picked a lot of winners when it comes to presidential elections. And so that might tell us something about the possibility of who might be the nominee and who might be the winner in 2008. But I don't want to get off on Giuliani too much, because Mitt Romney is the one who won the straw poll in Washington this last week, although he was followed by a very slim margin by Mike Huckabee. I hope tomorrow we'll have some time to talk about Mike Huckabee and some of his answers. I watched a lot of Mike Huckabee video very early this morning, and I'll tell you what, he's a very impressive individual. He strikes me as a extremely honest, extremely forthright, and thoughtful man. He's a Baptist minister running for president, and this weekend he came just behind Mitt Romney in that straw poll in Washington, D.C. at the Family Research Council's Summit on Values or whatever it was.
I'm kind of jazzed about this run for president.
You? Yeah, yeah. Your run for president?
So I need more people than a dozen to win.
Scroll
down. How do our listeners get there?
No, scroll down a little bit, please. Scroll down. There, I can see people are able to post kind of their pictures of who's there. I'm not going to mention any of them, but you already have, my goodness, if I'm not mistaken, you might already even have the librarian up at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, there, and among others who are advocating your presidency. Do you have a platform? Do you want to announce anything right now?
I won't announce a platform until I announce my candidacy. I'm running a Fred Thompson-type campaign.
Now, see, here's the problem. Even though it doesn't work this way in actual fact, technically, according to our managerial flow chart here at the radio station, you work for me. You're actually at the very bottom of the flow chart. I'm second from the bottom, and you're at the bottom, and you work for me. So people might ask the question, if Schwarz wins the White House in 2008, how will the fact that he technically works for Wilken, could that affect, could I be like Gordon Hinckley, you know, directing the power behind the throne, telling you what to do? Nobody wants me for president. Nobody wants me for president. All my solutions are radically simplistic. No one wants me for anything except what I'm doing right now, and I'm not really sure that anybody really wants me for that.
Hey, let's not talk about you. Let's talk about me, my campaign for president. I'm not going to win if you keep talking about you.
All right. Yeah, but hey, it says
I'll give you a cabinet position, like a spiritual advisor or something.
Since when have I been your spiritual advisor? But the line says if he can manage Todd Wilken running a country would be a breeze.
So can our listeners go, what, they go Facebook.com and then type in maybe in the search engine,
look,
Jeff Schwarz for president or something?
Just type in a couple of dozen for Jeff. A couple dozen for Jeff. Because they're going to misspell your last name. And when they get there, there must be some way to join. Although the guy who put this together is going to have to invite people to join. My understanding is that Facebook, you have to be invited to join. So you tell Chaz out there in Fort Collins, Colorado to get busy because he's got a lot of people who might want to be invited.
Well, you and I don't have many friends, so that's not good.
I have no friends. What are you talking about?
You have Maria and the two kids.
Yes.
And the dog.
Man's best
and
friend.
And me.
Man's
I consider you a friend.
Well,
it's,
yes.
It's not mutual, but I consider you my friend.
I have not let, you guys might not believe this, but Jeff has not even gotten to the point of being invited into the dome yet. He hasn't even been permitted on the grounds of the compound yet. That is reserved for very few. If Herman wanted to get into the compound, I'd let him in. Herman's calling from Illinois. Hi, Herman.
Thank you. You're talking about Mormonism and its basic values. And in Joseph Smith's day, his vision for America was a Mormon kingdom with himself as the sovereign leader. That's what he attempted to start at Nauvoo and Independence and Brigham Young getting over into Salt Lake City. They were trying to carry out that idea, and they would have done it by force of arms if necessary. They were referred to in early American history of that period as by the term white Muslims. Now, maybe today's Mormons, the Brighamites of Salt Lake City, are content with their corporate stock holdings simply to rake in the affluence from well-being of the American economy and are content with that. But early Mormonism had quite radical ideas for America with Mormons ruling it.
Thank you very much, Herman. That's a big question. Have the Mormons, the Salt Lake Mormons, ever renounced their desire, their stated desire to see a Mormon president and a Mormonizing of America? It was without a doubt Joseph Smith's goal. That's why he got chased around by troops a lot. And it was without a doubt the goal of Brigham Young as well. It may not be the goal of the Church of Latter-day Saints now, but they do have to account for the fact that their earliest founders wanted to Mormonize America. Not just evangelism, Mormonize America, a Mormon nation. I mean, it stands to reason. If you really are, if America really is, belongs to the descendants of the lost tribes of Israel, and Jesus puts his imprimatur on their occupancy here by visiting after his resurrection, and if God restores Christianity here, you can't blame Joseph Smith for thinking, hey, maybe I should be king of America. Andy's calling from Kirkwood. Hi, Andy.
Well, I'm wondering, you know, if we could trust a Baptist in the White House, and I'm certainly wondering if we could trust Jeff in the White House with you running as his Dick Cheney running mate.
I'm not, there's no way I'm on that ticket. I would have, that would require that I leave the compound, which I'm not doing. I travel enough as it is, and even the luxuries of Air Force One could not tempt me away from my family any more than I already am. So, hey, but if you could join the website Jeff for President, would you do it, Andy?
Oh, of course.
All right, I'll tell you what. Send an email to Jeff, and Jeff might be able to get that address to the guy who could invite you onto that Facebook page. I don't know how Facebook works. Don't ask me. My kids understand, but I don't understand.
But remember, this is a stealth campaign, so we have to keep quiet about this.
Oh, is this stealth?
Oh, this is definitely stealth. We're running underground.
Then you should be doing your job and telling me not to talk about this.
But I know we have no listeners.
Okay. Well, cat's out of the bag. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, issues ETC at KFUO.org. In Alton, here's Sandy. Hi, Sandy.
Hi. Just a short comment concerning politics. You were talking about Romney, of course, some of the other politicians, and I think conservatives, whether they're, you know, in the Christian realm or just, you know, political, fiscal conservatives always, you know, upheld Reagan as the standard bearer. But Jonah Goldberg last Monday had written about the very fact that Reagan, whom we all had looked up to, you know, very much so, he had commented in his article that we'd be surprised that while Reagan was California governor, he did sign a pretty liberal abortion bill because, you know, we know that he came from a liberal stance into conservatism. It was a process. He also said you'd be surprised how many times he signed along the Democratic congressional hikes on gas and payroll and other taxes during the 80s, although he did cut taxes for us, and also that he signed an amnesty bill for illegal immigrants. And just, you know, I'm just quoting what was written by Jonah Goldberg in the Post, and you'd have to, I guess, research it. But to me, Romney is acceptable. I really like Huckabee, Duncan Hunter, big time. But he would be acceptable. You know, some problems with some of his more liberal stances, but they have been kind of... I guess disquieted somewhat by Romney's view that he has moved into a conservative vein, but Huckabee, good man too. So just wanted to put that out there for just consumption about Reagan and his view from times past, how he became very conservative.
Well, a quick question for you, Sandy. Still there? No, she's gone. Sorry about that. I was going to ask her, what concerns might you have about Romney's beliefs? Not just his positions on these various issues, but his beliefs as a Mormon if he were to make the White House. Yeah, Reagan's legacy has largely been written by those who have conveniently forgotten some of the things about Reagan that we might have found. The conservatism that followed Ronald Reagan was more conservative than Reagan was. No one argues that. The conservative movement that came after Ronald Reagan ended up being more conservative than Reagan himself. Although Reagan was pretty conservative. And he came to a much more conservative viewpoint the closer he got to the White House. It's good to have a bit of perspective of history. Well, let's find out what Mitt Romney told Bob Schieffer of CBS News about his position on abortion.
Governor, in your speech to these evangelicals, you said you were a convert to the pro-life cause. In fact, you did once believe in protecting a woman's right to choose. You've been very candid about saying that's how you felt. But you said that your thinking on that has evolved. But last week on Face the Nation, Senator McCain said it's not just your change of position on abortion. Here's what he said.
It's not just the abortion issue, although he certainly was passionate in his advocacy for being pro-choice, but it's not... I mean, look at literally every major issue, whether it be immigration reform or taxes or immigration or any other issue, there has been changes in his position. And perhaps all of those are evolved. But I think that brings to mind the question isn't consistency on fundamental issues an important factor in this race? And I don't think that consistency has been there.
What is your response to that, Governor?
Well, I respect Senator McCain, but we have a different view on that regard. And obviously my position did change with regards to life. But on other issues, my positions have been very consistent with my principles and my views. On something like immigration, I feel very strongly that we should protect our borders and that amnesty is not the right way to go. Senator McCain has a different view in that regard. You know, I'm happy to go through issue by issue and talk about my views and my principles on those issues. But I'd note that as I look at the other candidates who are running for president, over time they look at specific areas and say, gosh, I was wrong on this. That needs to be adjusted. Senator McCain among them, he's changed his views relating to immigration in certain ways. He's changed his views on Roe v. Wade. He's changed his view. He voted against the Bush tax cuts. Now he's in favor of them.
When did he change his position on Roe v. Wade? He's always been pro-life.
No, he actually said that he said that he was in favor of it not being overturned, and now he says he thinks it should be overturned.
All right, so Mitt Romney is simply pointing out that being a convert to the pro-life position is not necessarily a bad thing. Now, I'm thinking about this, trying to be as fair as I can with Romney. As long as we're really talking about a genuine shift of position to the pro-life position, we should say, first of all, Governor Romney, welcome aboard, and thank you for coming around to the truth. And second of all, maybe someone who has come from a different position might be a stronger advocate for the pro-life position with the people who are sitting in the middle. I mean, there are pro-lifers and there are pro-choicers, and there's a bunch of people sitting there unconvinced in the middle. Maybe a Romney, who has come lately to the pro-life position, could better address those who are undecided on the issue. Are you buying Mitt Romney's conversion to the pro-life position? And what do you think? Could he be a better advocate for those who are sitting on the fence when it comes to the unborn? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Do we still have time to play this next thing, Mitt Romney on gay marriage? Another shift of position? Well, I've heard that Romney used to be in favor of gay marriage. And Bob Schieffer puts the question to him from CBS News.
Well, let's talk about gay rights. In your Senate race, you told a gay Republican group that you would be a stronger advocate for gays and their rights than your opponent, who was Ted Kennedy. Now you emphasize your opposition to gay marriage and civil union.
Well, actually, you see, you got to complete this, Bob. You got to put the whole thing together, all right? I also told gays in 1994 that I opposed gay marriage and civil union, because gay rights didn't include, at that time, people weren't talking about gay marriage and civil union. So I've always opposed gay marriage, but at the same time, I don't discriminate against people.
Well,
and
do you?
I don't discriminate against gay people, and I believe that gay people are entitled to have civil rights and not be discriminated against, and that's not something that I would oppose. But I do believe that marriage should be between a man and a woman, and I've always felt that way. And I've been a strong advocate for a constitutional amendment banning same-sex marriage, a constitutional amendment that defines marriage as a relationship between a man and a woman. And, you know, others that I'm running against, I think of the other next three leading candidates, all of them oppose that position.
All right, that's Mitt Romney on gay marriage. Clarifying the record, as far as I can tell, that's George W. Bush's position. Marriage is between a man and a woman, in theory in favor of a constitutional amendment establishing marriage as only between a man and a woman, opposed to gay marriage, but not against any other kind of discrimination, so to speak, unspecified term, discrimination against homosexuals in society. That's George W. Bush's position. Now, here's the real question. George W. Bush has said, yes, I would be in favor of a constitutional amendment, and maybe we need it, but I'll leave that up to the lawyers. And that's all the farther he's gone with it. What would it be like to have a Romney presidency where he's more strongly in favor of the constitutional amendment, perhaps even going so far as to get out in front of the issue and push, or get behind the issue and push? Yeah, one of those two. Get out in front of the issue and lead, or get behind the issue and push. Wouldn't that be a change? It certainly would. Two men can hold the same position, but are they willing to use the bully pulpit of the White House for it? That's a question that Romney hasn't answered yet. And maybe we'll never know, because he may never make it to the White House. He's got a lot of competition between now and then. Chief in his competition is Rudolph Giuliani, who, as I said before, is polling in Missouri as though he could beat Hillary Clinton if the election were held today. He has a few obstacles as well. One that just made it into the news before we came on the air from ABC News, an investigative report on Rudolph Giuliani's friendship with a Catholic priest who's been accused of sexual misconduct.
Rudy Giuliani has been dogged by questions in the past about his colleagues. Well, there is another one that has now arisen because of a defense of a longtime friend, and Chief Investigative Correspondent Brian Ross is here with that. Brian?
Good morning, Diane. For Rudy Giuliani, it is apparently a case of loyalty to a close friend. But the friend is a priest accused of sexually abusing teenage boys and currently banned from performing his priestly duties by the church. And now some of the priest accusers want to know why Giuliani is defending and protecting him.
When he went to Rome this year, Giuliani was accompanied by his wife Judith and his longtime friend and priest, Monsignor Alan Placa.
Alan Placa has been a friend of mine for 39 years. I know him really well.
Placa was a college classmate and best man at Giuliani's first wedding, the priest at Giuliani's second wedding to Dinah Hanover. And now, Placa works for Giuliani at his consulting firm, Giuliani Partners. That has outraged some of Monsignor Placa's former students and victims' rights groups, who say the priest is a child molester who should not be protected by a man running for president.
Anything that gives Monsignor Alan Placa any credibility or access to kids is very risky and dangerous, and we think that Giuliani, especially as a former prosecutor, should realize this.
I'm Father Alan Placa, a priest of the Diocese of Rockville Center in New York.
Monsignor Placa was told by the church to stop performing his priestly duties in 2002 as two former students and an altar boy came forward with their allegations.
Alan Placa molested me in January of 1975, and that's when it started.
Richard Tolder, now a mortgage broker in Albany, New York, was a student at a boys' Catholic high school where Placa taught. Appearing publicly for the first time, Tolder says the abuse started when he and Placa were making posters for a Right to Life march.
As he started to explain how these posters should be done, I realized that something's rubbing my body, and I didn't know what it was, when after a minute or two I realized that he's feeling me.
Tolna and the others testified before a grand jury in Suffolk County, New York, which concluded that Priest F, who Tolna says is Placa, had sexually molested three teenage boys again and again and again. The report also accused Priest F of being instrumental in developing a church policy that used deception and intimidation to essentially keep the church scandal quiet.
He was more concerned with protecting the priests, protecting the reputation of the diocese, and protecting the church coffers than he was protecting the children.
No criminal charges were brought against Placa because of the statute of limitations, and he denied the allegations. It was just months later that Giuliani put Placa on the payroll of Giuliani Partners, where Placa now works. Giuliani defended Placa last week on the campaign trail after protesters in St. Louis and Milwaukee confronted him.
Hasn't been accused of anything, hasn't been convicted of anything. We give some of the worst people in our society presumption of innocence and benefit of the doubt. And this is more than that. I mean, I know the man. I know who he is. So I support him.
This man did unjust things, and he's being protected and employed and taken care of. It's not a good thing.
Monsignor Placa would not speak with us for this story, but a Giuliani spokeswoman did arrange for four other students from the same school, although from a different class, to vouch for Father Placa. They said they had not been molested and that they had never heard of allegations like this when they were at the school, Diane.
All right. Brian Ross investigates. Thanks, Brian.
Very interesting. I imagine we're looking at a possible defection from the Rudolph Giuliani campaign pretty soon. In spite of, this is always the way it is, they... whether it's presidents or candidates for president, when something is discovered about one of the people who works for them and it looks bad, they defend them and defend them and defend them until they fire them. Usually happens this way. They have my full confidence, and the next day, they're gone. Because after all, it really is about the candidate, no matter who's running, and it's not about the person who's working for them. Tomorrow on the program, we're going to be talking with Pastor Charles Lehman. You might have heard about this. It's quite an interesting development. Apparently, when J.K. Rowling was in the United States recently talking about her latest book, The Last in the Harry Potter series, in answer to a question in New York City, she said that Albus Dumbledore, the headmaster of Hogwarts School for Witchcraft and Wizardry, a character in her book, a fictional character, is in fact gay.